I'm going to offer you a perspective on reality, and I don't know if it's right or wrong. I don't care. I'm going to tell you what I see today. And if it helps you in some way, then that's a blessing. And that's just the way I see it. If all else fails, I'll just do some of my impressions. I do a really good flamingo impression that you're going to love. I told Robbie I was going to do it, and he demanded that I not do it, but I put my foot down. Thank you, Diane, for getting that. Reality. Whenever I'm studying something, I go the natural route, I go the spiritual route. When all else fails, I ask Wesley Joe and she tells me. But in my natural study, I found this quite interesting. These are some synonyms to reality. Now, for those of you who don't get synonyms, it's something that, oh, another word that means the same thing. Listen to these words, and this really sparked something in me. Other words for reality: existence, matter, real world, sensibility, truth, absoluteness, actuality, authenticity, certainty, concreteness, corporeality, genuineness, palpability, presence, solidity, substance, tangibility, validity, bottom line, brass tacks, name of the game, the way it is, nuts and bolts, and what's what. Isn't that great? That's reality. This is the nuts and bolts. This is the brass tacks. This is what's what. This was in the dictionary. The antonyms, the opposite of a reality: abstract, falseness, ideas, fantasies, concepts, beliefs, hypotheses, imaginations, suppositions, and theories. Well, that just takes the mind right out of it. You can't think anything. You can't have an idea. You can't suppose anything. You can't imagine anything. You can't have a concept. You can't have a belief, and because all that interrupts reality. All that is something other than reality. If you say, I believe this, that doesn't necessarily make it reality. In fact, it may be working directly against what is real. What you believe is not as important as what's real. Now, it might be important to you, what you believe. You might need to change it. And reality. I was on a reality show 10 years ago. Some of you saw me on that. And my idea of a reality show is that we'd just go out there and be real. And they would film us being real. That was how they started in the beginning. They thought, instead of having actors and scripts and those things, we'll just take a camera into somebody's house and get the real deal. We'll watch The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Or we'll watch what it's like to be a real whatever. And that's how reality TV started. But by the time 2007 rolled around and I was on a reality show, they scripted everything we did and said. They would tell us ahead of time, now here's what we want this scene to look like. We want it to look like we just walked in the living room and y'all were all having a friendly chat, and two of you were drinking wine and two of you were drinking Coca-Cola and one of you was not drinking anything, and y'all were having a discussion about whether it's right or wrong to drink alcohol if you're a spiritual person. They would set up the entire thing, tell us what to wear, how to see it. Now, you angle more to the right, get the light better on your face. All right, now hold one hand up with a glass in it. And they would, I mean, it was completely not reality. It was their ideas, their suppositions, their script. It was, reality ought to be unscripted. Reality ought to not be hard to come up with. If we want to deal with reality today, it shouldn't be something that we have to really work hard at. It's the core. It's the thing that's already there. We have to work hard not to focus on reality or not engage in reality. Reality is nakedness. Everything else is costumed. You know, naked's easy. You don't have to put on anything, do anything, fix anything. Just standing here naked, I'd be in reality. But I have to costume myself because of my thoughts and my imaginations and my concepts and my beliefs. I have to put on airs. I have to put on personalities. I have to put on clothes. I have to put Elmer's glue in my hair. Tell Donna Slimp this is not Elmer's glue. Donna Slimp on Facebook has accused me of using Elmer's glue. Tell her I just crush up a Viagra in my hair gel.
Lucy has that.
Viagra? See, if you crush some up in your hair gel, your hair will do its thing. My sweet daddy, Lord rest his soul, he left here in 2006 and went to live in greater places. And the doctor prescribed him some Viagra. And after about a week, I said, is that doing you any good? He said, it really is. I put one in each of my tomato holes and I don't have to use cages. So if all else fails, Diane. my daddy was a scientific man. He did experiments on his Viagra, and he told me later, he said, I got the recipe. I said, what is it? He said, 5% silicone and 95% fix-a-flat. So the idea is to take away the script, take away the costumes, take away the production and the film, and then we get the real thing. To take away all the extras and all, turn out the lights, take the stuff off the set, and what you have left is reality. It's the bare, naked, constant truth. You don't have to create reality. See, on reality shows, they're trying to create a reality that they want you to believe is actual. You don't have to create reality. You don't have to change reality. You don't have to alter reality. You don't have to plan reality. You don't have to form reality. You don't have to set it up so it looks better. You don't have to make excuses for the reality. Reality is reality. My reality is not different from your reality. And we say that it is, and that's true on a certain level, but reality's reality is reality. It is reality. Now, your perception of it and mine may be somewhat different, but that doesn't change reality. It's still reality. We may all look at a mountain, and you may describe it one way, and I may describe it another way, but that doesn't make the mountain each way that we describe it. Our perception of it changes, but it's still the mountain, and it is what it is, whether we're blind or can see it. Makes no difference. Lucy has been running around this house, and some of you may not know Lucy. Anybody not know who I'm talking about? Little white dog. We got a little white Scottish Terrier running around the house. So see, there was somebody here that didn't even know Lucy's name. I'm glad you didn't know, because it helps my illustration. Lucy's been in the house for the whole time we've been here. Some saw her and some didn't. Some touched her and some didn't. Some saw her clearly and some just caught a glance of her as she ran by. Some touched her, some didn't. Some embraced her, some didn't. Some fed her, some didn't. Reality's the same. Reality's in this room. Some of you saw it and some of you didn't. Some of you fed it and some of you didn't. Some of you touched it and some of you didn't. Some of you caught a glance of it and some of you embraced it and scratched it and put a blanket on the floor for it to lay on. Some of you entreated reality, and reality greeted you at the door. When I walked in this morning, reality was at the door to greet me, or Lucy was. And I took the time to embrace reality. Some of you, reality walks right by you and you don't even notice it. You're so caught up in your cup of coffee and cake that you might not even notice reality if it bit you on the butt. To Wesley Joe, we were talking about Lucy last night, and she thinks she is a princess dog, and this is her castle. Oh. That's what she has come up with.
Great.
Yes. In fact, this is Lucy's house, and Mike and Diane live here. which I feel like is pretty much the case. But she said she's a princess dog. We were laying in the bed the first night we were here, and she was snuggled up against me, and we were talking about people we'd seen at the meeting, and she said, Gary aggravates me. I said, Gary's been aggravating people for decades. It's mostly preachers and Carol. But we were talking about different aspects of the crowd and whatnot. And she said, Lucy is a princess dog. I said, well, there you go. That was her perspective of Lucy. And so Lucy is a princess dog. But Lucy doesn't change. No matter what you think of Lucy, maybe you don't like dogs and maybe you love them. Doesn't matter. Lucy's still Lucy. Reality is still reality. We've been talking about dreams a lot. And I dream a lot. I don't know if y'all do. Last night, in fact, I dreamed about two or three things. I dreamed I was swimming and there was a bunch of people in the water. I dreamed I was fishing on the shore and there were a bunch of kids and they were trying to catch fish. And I began to control the fish with my mind and make them bite the hooks of the kids so they could catch fish. which I would do if I could. But first I would control the fish and make them get on my hook, which is something that seems to be impossible. I'm not a very good fisherman, but that was part of my dream. I also dreamed about a horse last night, but that was a nightmare. Good comedy is all about the audience. It's all about how sharp the audience is, I just want to say. Most people's lives are dreams that are filled with impossible elements. Do y'all ever dream about doing things in your dreams that you know you really can't do when you wake up? You say, I wish I could make fish bite hooks. Or I wish I could fly. Yeah. Or I wish I could pull gold nuggets out my butt. I mean, I wish, you know, you do things. I wish I had that kind of money or looked like that. Or your dreams include so many impossible things that, you know, that don't match your reality. And if you switch the tables a little bit, most of your lives, your everyday life, is a dream full of impossible realities that you've created, impossible expectations, and you have all these from so many different areas, all these things that aren't real, and it's not going to happen, it's not supposed to happen, and you've got all these emotions tied to what did happen and what didn't happen and why it happened, and this happened to me because I did that or didn't do that, and all that's just a dream, all that's just a cloudy, weird dream. Go back to sleep. You were better off asleep if you flip the tables on that. I had an old pastor friend, Apostle G.C. McCurry. Some of you may know him. You've probably heard him from Georgia. Old G.C. McCurry is a kingdom man. And he told me one time, he told me two different things about dreams. One thing he told me, he says, Robert, have you ever dreamed you were on a stage in a foreign country speaking to a crowd of people in a foreign language? And I said, as a matter of fact, I have several times. He said, how do you know it was a dream? He said, while you sleep, maybe you went and did that. Are you open and willing for to be used any way that you need to be used? I said, well, absolutely. He said, what if that was your real life? And waking up here in Waco, Georgia, with all these youngins and animals running around was just a bad dream. To him, it was a bad dream that I had so many kids and animals and whatnot. He didn't like that part of it. But he said, what if you've got it flipped? And he said, the Lord caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam. And as a result, we're all characters in that same dream that started when Adam fell asleep, because the Bible sure don't say he woke him up. Give you something to think about. Maybe Adam's just dreaming and we're all elements of his dream. Or maybe your life is a dream. Anyway, again, Wesley, I was meditating on these things and trying to find the center, the reality or the truth of it. Wesley comes up and says, Daddy, listen to this. I said, I'm trying to meditate. Go over there. Listen, Daddy, listen. No, Wesley, really now, I'm trying to do something. Listen to this song. She's very persistent. I said, okay, I'll listen to the song. She's got a little iPad. She hits the button. It says, it's kids singing. They go, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Y'all know the song? Merrily, 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 merrily. She's singing it with me. Life is but a dream. I said, okay, thank you, baby. I kissed her on the head and she ran off. And I said, row, row, row your boat, not somebody else's. Yeah. Don't try to row my boat. It's none of your business what my boat is. It's none of your business who I sleep with or where I sleep with them or what I do, how I wear my hair, what I look like, who I like, who I vote for. None of that's any of your damn business. I'm going to row my boat. You row yours. We'll all be better off if we'll just row our own boats. I'm meditating now on what the angel brought me. Row, row, row your boat gently. Gently. Just row it gently. There's no reason for you to make waves. You don't get any points for being a butthole. You don't get any extra points for upsetting people and proving your point and showing how much you know and how smart you are and why. Just row it gently down the stream. Don't make waves if you don't have to. Gently down the stream. Some of y'all rowing upstream. It's hard to row upstream. Yeah. I tried that in the Little Tennessee River. I'll tell you what, you can row and row and row and row and row and look over there in the same trees sitting right there where you started. And I row and row. I said, I'm going to go up and see the neighbors. I'm rowing. I'm looking. I'm still seeing my camper. I'm thinking, this is not working at all. So I got in the car and drove up there. But because it's hard to row upstream. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. It makes so much more sense. Life is made for you to row downstream. And if you're fighting, if life is hard for you and you're waking up every day and feeling like you're having to row upstream again, you got to make some, you got to look at things a little bit differently and get in the flow of what it ought to be, because you shouldn't be struggling every day of your life to live. Struggles and suffering come when we aren't embracing and seeing reality. That's where struggling comes from. That's where suffering comes from. So row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, merrily, happily. Have some fun and laugh and have some joy, merrily. Why? Because life is but a dream. Wh- what great revelation that she brought to me in this cute little song. Reality is the truth of what's happening now, regardless of whether or not you see or embrace that truth. It's still reality. Whether it's your reality or whether you agree with it or whether you were doctrinally adjusted to accept it as the will of a god or a devil or it was a result of you, they tell me I can create my own reality. I don't believe that. I believe that I can put certain colors on the canvas of my life and shape my perception or vision of the but reality is reality. I don't think it's for me to create or me to make or me to, I get that side of it. And I do agree with the principle of create your own world. You know, you can make your own way and make your world beautiful. I get that. But meanwhile, there's a reality that's already set in place and has been from before time began and will still be there after time ends, if it ever should. And it never changed. The reality is always the same. It's an immovable, unchangeable, irreversible fact, truth, entity, being, however you want to see it. Reality is to be welcomed and entreated and embraced. In the presence of reality, every time I'm able to connect to reality, how can I say this? When I connect to reality in a room, in a situation, in a phase, in a season of my life, it opens the door for me to be able to better connect to the source within. That's when I get connected. When I finally see what's really going on here, when I get past all the emotions, when I get past all of the costumes and all the garbage and all the stuff, and I can see the reality of a situation, that's when I can connect to the source within. That's when I can add some peace and joy and love and gentleness and goodness and meekness and kindness and faith and temperance and wisdom and knowledge. And that's when I can, you know, bring to the table in the situation, I can bring to the table some things that might be a blessing to some folks that are also involved in looking at the situation. If I can just hone into the reality, then that helps me tap into the source and I'm able to outpour some things that will help the other people that are observing this same reality. I'm good at that. And most people who are servants in the healthcare industry, most people that are, even I have a friend who's an ambulance driver. And the first thing he does when he gets to a scene is he observes the scene and he tries to help all the people there find calmness and peace. And in the midst of the turmoil and the chaos, he tries to pour out to them. He speaks gently and softly and tells them, it's going to be okay. I mean, they've got an arm laying over there and a leg laying over there. And he says, it's going to be fine. You're going to be okay. I said, it's my job. I feel like my job is to help bring them back around to peace. Because if they're peaceful and calm, we'll be able to help them much more than if they're not. But the reality of the situation, you know, he looks into that and then tries to help them by giving them the gift that he has or is. It's kind of like plugging in a lamp. You walk into a room and the room's dark. Well, there's reality in the room already, but somebody needs to plug it in sometimes. Sometimes I can't show you reality. Sometimes I can't even see it myself, but I know it's there. And I know that if we can plug into it, and in fact, corporately, when you plug into it, it's a bright light. It's like one of the ones that Mike makes over there. You might have trouble telling the difference in reality. Most of my counseling is helping people see reality. I've been counseling for 30 years, and most people that come in and tell me their problem, the problem is they're not seeing reality. They're not really seeing the real truth that is constant and stable, and they've got all these costumes and all these ideas and all these emotions, and it's all floating around like butterflies, and it keeps them confused, and they don't know which they're pulled and torn and back and forth, and I just have to like shoo the butterflies out of the room and show them reality and then help them embrace that reality and the truth that is found in reality. I'm a little OCD, so that's one reason I put things in rhymes. I write songs, many songs every day. I write poems. If Wesley Jo wants, make up something. What does she want from the refrigerator? Somebody give me a word. Pickle. She wants a pickle. I will say, Wesley Jo went to the refrigerator and I gave her a nickel. She tried to buy a lemon, but it cost a dime, but she could afford a pickle. And I'll make up little rhymes like that, just spur of the moment, because it's in me to do that. And it helps me bring things into perspective. When I was in elementary school, my teacher would be teaching on Columbus and whatever, and I was making up a poem, and I'd raise my hand and say, I got a poem about that. After about three times, she wouldn't answer me anymore, but and they were silly and dumb, but it helped me to remember things. And to me, it like, okay, that's in order now. I'll put it in rhyme, or it's in, you know, it's in, I can do acronyms, and that helps. It helps me to put something in order like that. And maybe you don't like that, and maybe it doesn't help you, but it helps me, so I do it. I brought this on a chart. I'm not going to hang it up on the mantle, but I made this up this morning, and I did like an acronym with reality. I can make a little copy of this if anybody's interested later, because this helps me as I search for reality or as I observe the reality that's already there. The first thing I've got on this thing is rest. Starts with R. There is a revelation that comes when you recognize reality. We're supposed to labor to enter into rest. The only time the scripture ever tells us to labor, to enter into rest, is found in Hebrews. And it's kind of an odd thing to do, to have to work to not work, you know, to work to rest. But what Paul was saying there is you ought to do everything in your power to find rest, not ways not to rest. In Christianity and most religions will give you 3,005 ways not to rest. There's always something you have to do. You have to pray. You have to repent. You have to believe. You have to have faith. You have to... None of that's real. None of that's reality. That's all the butterflies in the room that are filling up the room, and moths and dragonflies and bumblebees and wasps and those guys. They're all flying around the room, and none of that's reality. Rest. Reality has to do with rest. If you want to have reality in your situation, look for the thing that makes you rest. Look for the rest that comes. Rest will come when you embrace reality. It may not be everything that you thought it was going to be. It might be more or less, but you can find rest in it. And there's an assurance there. E, eternal. The perspective must be from the eternal. There we see the energy in everyone and everything. When you, we've got a situation, if you are coming from the perspective of the eternal, then you see the energy. That's not just in the thing that's happening, but you see the energy within the people. You're able to look into that eternal realm and see an eternal result, which is never bad. In the spirit, nothing ever turns out wrong or bad. Well, wrong or bad is also perspective, I guess. But it always turns out the way it's supposed to in the spirit. You don't have to change it. You don't have to fluff it up. You don't have to make God look better by, you know, by explaining what happened and here's why this happened this way because that... It's just eternal, so you can see the light. You can find the energy in it. A is agreement. An agreement is made. When I'm looking for reality, when I finally see what's real in this situation, there's an agreement between my soul and my spirit. Now, my spirit is my source, my light, my energy, my Christ. That's the spirit. My soul is my mind, my emotions, and my intellect. It's the psuche. It's where we get the word psychiatry, psycho. All those other words, that comes from a Greek word called psuche. And that's not, your soul is not, we never were right one time when we were out trying to save people's souls. That you don't save a soul. A soul is a mind, it's an emotion, it's an intellect, it's the, you're really a soul and you have a spirit and you live in a body. Technically, there's a lot of tripart teachings, but the real you is a soul. It's not a spirit. The spirit is Christ, and there's a union there with the, between soul and spirit. But you can find an agreement. A lot of times my soul and spirit don't agree. A lot of times the spirit, the truth of the matter, the realness, the reality is something other than what I'm thinking or thought. So for me to find that agreement where, and the spirit never budges. The spirit doesn't compromise and say, okay, I'll go your way. The soul always have to give up and believe what the spirit already knows. So my mind, my emotions, my intellect, the knowledge, my experience, all those things that make up that part of me that wants to argue. Jesus faced it in the garden. He didn't want to die. He believed that Isaiah's prophecies were correct, and he prophesied about Jesus' death that it was a horrible death, that he was so marred that he didn't even look like a human, that he was nailed. He understood what crucifixion was because they had him regularly in his neighborhood, and he did not want to go that way. And this is interesting. He said, well, you know, whatever's going to happen, I get it. And he's praying. Nobody would pray with him, of course. So he's praying, and he said, not my will. There's the mind, the will, and the emotions. Be done, but thy will be done. Reality. Father, Spirit, Rock, not what I want, but what you want. Now, so Jesus' will was not the same as the Father's all the time. Because right there he said, not my will be done, but thy will be done. That's coming to an agreement and allowing your mind to agree with what Spirit is doing, even if it's not the most comfortable thing. That's where you come into agreement. When we're looking for reality, there's a place where you'll be able to agree and your mind will settle on the truth of reality and you'll be able to say, okay, I accept it. It's not what I wanted. It's not what I planned, but I accept this as the reality. This is where Spirit's blessing is. This is where the light is. I accept it. So you get that agreement. The fourth thing is light. We look at what has been hidden by emotions and circumstances. Love exposes lies. And light exposes darkness. You can walk through this room. If you come over here tonight and it's pitch dark in this room, you will be injured walking from one side to the other. There's light stands and camera pods and there's chairs and there's piano benches and there's cake plates piled up around Sarah and there's all kinds of stuff that could hurt you, but if you put the light into the situation, you can see what's real. We have to have light. The next thing is eye is inward. A peace comes when one experiences the witness of the real, the rest, eternal agreement and light. There's a peace that comes that passes understanding. T is for truth. The truth will make you free. Honesty is a doorway to reality. Now, the truth has to be spoken in love, but to be honest about a situation, to be honest, you know, that opens the door for people to see the reality. Honesty is hard sometimes because I'd rather you be my friend than be honest with you. I'd rather you like me than to tell you the honest truth. I can't even tell somebody when a booger's on their nose. And it's a natural occurrence. Mucus forms in the nose and sometimes it escapes and slides to the outside. Or some, you know, it's not anything somebody planned. Nobody's ever said, I'm going to put a big old booger on my nose, you know, put that booger up there and walk around with it. Well, some of my sons used to do that. And they did some really gross things, but they ate bugs and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, if somebody has a booger on their nose, it shouldn't be hard to be honest because you're actually helping them to be able to say, you know, or your pants are unzipped. Of course, that means you were watching their crotch, which is kind of a problem. I mean, you know, that's a bit of a problem, I guess. But why are you looking? in the honesty of that, you know, you get it. So truth will make you free. Honesty is the doorway to reality. You get down to the reality of the situation and it's not as bad as you thought it was in the beginning. They just forgot to zip up. I do three things in the bathroom. That's too graphic. Never mind. When I go to the bathroom, you gotta shake and then put something up and then zip. But if I happen to have an extra button on my pants or something, then I'll leave one of the other steps off. It's just I do three things in my mind. So I've done three things, and the last one should have been zipped, but I forgot. There's one pair of pants I wear that I'm always unzipped in because there's a button you have to button, and that was the third thing I do in the bathroom, so I'm done. So different people's minds work different ways. Truth is understanding who I am in every moment. Truth is knowing who I am in every moment and seeing the reality of that. Nothing else matters. I know who I am and I know what's going on here and I see into the spirit. I see the reality. So all the wasps and the flies and the bumblebees and so that, no, that I'm not, no, 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 no. Here's the truth. I'm the truth in this moment. I see the reality. And that's where we find the productivity of the Spirit. That's where we find the rest and the eternal agreement and light pouring in. And the last one is so simple. The wise just yield. Let it go. You pull up to a stop sign, just let them go. Yield. Let them go. Don't fight for your way. Don't fight for your rights. Don't fight for, you know, by God, I know I'm right. Well, then you don't. You're right there. You're wrong by saying that. So just let it go. You learn to yield. Give up the control and the need to be justified, the need to be right, the need to put it in a neat little box so it all makes sense. It doesn't have to make sense. Just yield to the higher, greater peace that's flowing. Just yield and know that everything's all right. It don't look all right. It's okay. Now you're back in the mind. Get over here in the spirit where in reality, nothing could ever go wrong. In reality, everything is perfect. So get out of your mind, take the costume off, get naked, and you'll see that everything's just fine. I'll put these here if somebody wants to look at them afterwards. I'll give you an example. I was counseling. I've counseled for 30 years. Most of it's free. I should have got a degree and charged people. I called a church when I needed counseling. I needed some help. And the pastor said he'd be glad to talk to me for $125 an hour. I thought, damn, I messed up. I should have been doing that all along instead of preaching. Oh, but he had a degree. So anyway, it was a wasted hour, I'll tell you that. And I wrote him a bad check. At the end of the counseling session, I said, one of the things I want to cover is I'm really bad about lying and I don't have any money in the bank. So I wrote you a check, but it's worthless. So anyway, it's $125, but you know, oh well. But in my counseling, I'll give you an example, and I was thinking about this recently. A woman came to me for help, and she was in turmoil. She had been she had hired the Russians to hack into her husband's email.
What?
Or, well, actually, she just he left it on or something. I don't know. But we're gonna make the story sound better, so you know it'll sell on TV. So the Russians hacked into his email and sent to her what they found. And she found out that he was having a relationship online and that he was meeting with a man having a clandestine affair. And she had never known it. The clue should have been his hair was always perfectly coiffed and he decorated for a living. So, hello. And he loved musicals. What do you want, lady? I went to her house and, you know, I'm sitting in the living room. They got pictures of Hello Dolly and all that. I said, are these your pictures? She said, they're my husband's. I said, you should have known, girl. You should have known. Real men don't hang up posters of musicals in the living room. Okay. But she found out through an email that he was having a relationship with some guy and whatnot. So also, that's the first clue she ever had that he was gay. You know, so that's, she did what any sensible woman would do. And she cut off his pecker with some pinking shears. And no, she didn't really. She did what any sensible woman would do. She got mad about it and she broke his stuff and she found the stuff that was most precious to him and burned it in a burn barrel in the yard. And just, you know, started going through all the motions and emotions that you're going to do when you're disappointed and hurt. And I told her, I said, I'm going to help you. If you'll let me help you, I'll help you find the reality of this situation. And if you will look at the reality of this whole situation, it will bring you truth and peace and you'll be able to walk in love with him. If you'll let me walk you through it and let's find the reality, because this is not real. The stuff you're doing, this whole thing, she said, do anything. So I told her, here's what I said. You will rest when you see the eternal perspective. There will be an agreement between your spirit and soul. You will be immersed in love and light, and you will find an inward peace as you accept the truth and yield to the higher way. So there's the letters of reality. Rest, eternal perspective, agree. Spirit and soul, you'll be immersed in love, light, find inward peace, accept the truth, and yield. So it's the little pattern that I've used in counseling to help people find the reality of the situation instead of being moved by all the things they see and think and all the outward costumes of it. So none of this involves you, by the way. If this sounds like works, then you're hearing it the wrong way. The only thing I'm asking you to do is yield. All the rest of that stuff, those are natural outgrowth of the fruit that's in you. All the rest of that stuff, it's not a list of steps, it's not a formula. Just the let go part, I guess that might be something you need to do, is just yield to this process that's already happening on the inside of you. So my counsel with her as we walked through the list, I mean, I showed her the situation. I said, you know, let's look at the truth of it and you can find some rest. The truth is he didn't choose to be gay. He's always been gay. The truth is you chose not to see it, and there have been clues that you chose to ignore through the years. The fact that you haven't slept together for 5 years might be a clue, because she told me that. And so I kept going through, you know, things with her. I said, so here's the fact of the matter. And I showed her the truth of it, and the truth began to set her free. And before the session was over, I was sitting there while she called him on the phone to tell him that she was sorry, that she would always love him, that she accepted who he was, that she understood it, and she wanted to maintain a relationship because of their kids. It was like a miracle, amazing miracle thing, because I got her to face reality.
There you go.
And that brought rest to her life. All of a sudden, she didn't feel slighted. It wasn't about he chose him over me. It's something that he didn't have the power to love you in the same way that he loves this guy that he'd been seeing for years. I said, that wasn't even about you. You tried to make it about you.
Right.
But by showing her the reality of the situation, It helped her find some rest and some peace, and she was wrapped in love before the thing was over. And you'll love the punchline on this one, the end of it, and this is the truth. A year later, she ended up happily married again to a woman. And the whole time, she said that she'd known that she was a lesbian her whole life. She said, but it wasn't acceptable to her religion, so she met her gay husband at a gay nightclub. Dancing with a man. And she was surprised when he came out gay. It turned out gay anyway. Anyway, so the happy ending to a great story. Let's take a quick look before I close at an afternoon in the life of Jesus. Jesus and the boys are walking from Capernaum to Jerusalem or from wherever to wherever. And it's hot and they're hungry and they're tired. And they come up on a leper, and the leper waves and says, how y'all know? The leper rings the bell and says, unclean, unclean, because Moses said they had to. Well, Jesus goes over and gives him a big old hug because the Bible said not to. And Jesus loved doing what the Bible said not to. His whole ministry was bucking the Bible. So he ran over and hugged the leper, and the disciples said, don't touch him, Master, don't touch him. And he said, y'all dumb. We're going to love on everybody. It don't matter if they have leprosy or not. Jesus hugs the leper. They go on down the road. They're hungry. There is no McDonald's or Wendy's, but they see a field full of grain. But it's the Sabbath. And the Bible's clear. You can't work on the Sabbath. So he says, let's pick some grain, because he didn't care what the Bible said. So Jesus took the boys into the field, and they began to pick grain, which you can't do on the Sabbath. And they got ready to eat the grain. And one of them said, we must not eat with unwashed hands. Moses hath said this. And Jesus said, BS, let's eat. So Jesus is, you know, Jesus is eating the grain on the Sabbath that they worked to get with unwashed hands that they took from another man's field. Yeah. I can't even tell you how many times Jesus broke the Bible. That was their Bible. Exactly. That was their Bible of the day. Yeah. So they're over here eating their grain and whatnot. And the disciples were somewhat troubled because they didn't live in reality. Jesus lived in reality. He didn't let a book tell him something other than reality. Right. He didn't let a religion affect his view of reality. He didn't let anything affect the way he saw reality. So they had trouble with some of Jesus' doings and sayings sometimes. So they're sitting there talking about it. Jesus recognized that they were troubled. You might know this as John 14. And Jesus looks at them and he says, let not your heart be troubled. Did you know that you can let it not be troubled or let it be troubled? That's up to you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's totally up to you. You can't control the circumstances, but you can control if you're going to be troubled by them or not.
Yeah.
That's up to you. And Jesus said, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions, and if it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, you will be also. Now they're sitting here hearing completely in the natural. And they're thinking, well, good, we get a mansion when we die. I'm going to have a mansion up in heaven. I hope it looks like Michael Nevin's house. I mean, or whatever the song is that you sang at your last Southern Gospel concert. But that's not what he's talking about. Jesus said, you believe in God, believe also in me, because there's no difference. Then he said, in my Father's dwelling place, I'll give you the Greek words, in my Father's presence, there are many dwelling places. Mansion's a word that we know mansion is a big house on a hill that we owe a big mortgage on. But the mansion's there. It was the dwelling place of the Spirit. And he was pointing at them. They didn't get it. But he said, in the Father's, in the economy of the Spirit, my Father has many mansions. Yeah. They were those mansions.
Yeah.
We are the mansions where the Spirit lives, where love, it's not houses somewhere on a hillside. Because he'll live in a mobile home or a camper. I've proven that recently. Well, as far as the Spirit of truth and love, that doesn't make any difference what your house looks like, because we're the house. And so he's trying to give them a great spiritual principle. And when he said, I go to prepare a place for you, we think, well, you know, he went to heaven with a nail belt on, a nail tool belt on, and he's going to build us a house that we're going to go to one day, which I bet he's wore slap out all the Christians trying to get a house in heaven. You know, he's been working for 2,000 years, but it would take 8,000 years to build enough houses for all the Christians in Georgia. So, of course, maybe that's why a lot of carpenters die in tragic accidents. Jesus needs them to help him build these houses for the people that are coming.
I don't know.
He needs help. Jesus needs help building the houses. But, but he's trying to explain to them a principle that I go and the way of my life is to prepare for you to be like I am. And here's how I am. Thomas said, we don't know where you're going and we don't know the way, in verse 5 of that same passage. And Jesus says these famous words that I get quoted to me every week. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Now, Jesus was standing in a place of revelation, and he understood that not that he was the way, he was the truth, he was the life, he was the Father, he was the Spirit, he was the mansion, he was the... He understood what we're all endeavoring to understand. It wasn't about a deity, Zeus-like deity in the sky with a planet called heaven with houses in it, and he's going to the cross so they could go there one day if they said the sinner's prayer. That's not what he was saying. He was saying, I'm going along in my journey to show y'all a revelation. And then he gave his revelation. I'm the way, truth, and life. Now, it's not for you to say, Jesus is the way, truth, and life. No, you have to get your own revelation of that. I am the way, the truth, and the life. It doesn't help you to know Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. That's his revelation. Your revelation is, I'm the way. I'm the truth. I'm the life. It's right here. Reality is, I'm not trying to get heaven to do something for me by acting right and praying right and doing right and talking right and living right. I am life. And I'm trying to find a place to be. I'm trying to find a place to squirt some life out today because I'm life. I'm love. I'm the way. I'm the truth. So it's as Jesus explained that to him, it's a revelation that he had that we're supposed to have. Philip pops in and he says, oh, just show us God and it'll suffice us. Just show us the Father and that'll do. He says, have I been with you this long and you don't recognize me? Have I walked around? Do you not see that there is no God, that I'm he and you are he? Do you not see that it's us, that we're the way, the truth, and the life? Can you not understand that I can't pull back the clouds and show you someone looking down at you answering prayer requests from TBN, that this is actually it? This is it? This is us? And Thomas of Didymi said, what's TBN? And Jesus said, I knowest, but thou knowest not. Okay, I made that part up. But there they were, and Jesus was trying to show them the reality. They faced an issue and a problem, and he took them right into the reality of it to show them the reality, and the ones who received it found the rest that comes. They found the light that comes. They found all these things. They found agreement. When their mind agreed with what they were hearing in the Spirit, they found peace and rest, and as they began to yield to the truth that Jesus was speaking, then they found what they needed to find. That's reality. That was the reality of the situation. Now, our doctrines have turned that little story into some weird doctrine about houses in the sky and flying off to be in them, and that's not reality. The reality of that situation is, I am the truth, and you are the truth. Look in the mirror when you get home and say, I am the truth. Don't do it here because we don't want you in the bathroom that long. We have to get in there. So wait till you get home and say, I am the truth. I am the life. Suffering is a result of not embracing reality.
Uh-oh. I'm scared.
Suffering is a result of not embracing reality. I won't even interpret that. You're a perfect being in a perfect place, right on time and without flaw. You cannot be born. You cannot die. Everything is part of the universe. Embrace of your universe. Embrace reality. To have peace, joy, faith, hope, and you can rest in unconditional, irrevocable, undeniable love every day of your life. The reality is you're okay, and I'm okay, and nothing else matters. That's all I have. Thank you so much for allowing me to share. I hope that in some way inspired you or touched you or helped you in your journey, and I'm honored and blessed to be a part. Mikey, thank you for including me. Thank you so much. We're coming back at 2:00. Mikey has a session. But those of you, we won't be filming it, I don't guess, but at 1:00, I'd talk to Diane about, those of you who are interested, we're going to have a circle of healing is what I call it. And it's not magic healing powers from, you know, if you give me a love offering, but I will try that. Anybody that wants to bring a love offering, I'll give you a tear of my shirt or something. But no, we just sit. We put on some inspirational music. We sit in a circle. We meditate. There'll be some aromas. There'll be some oils, some essential oils, which is what Jesus used. He was a young living member. I saw that in the Greek. And so
he helped me sober.
Yes, absolutely. So we will have some frankincense. We'll have some living oil. And if we feel so desire, we'll anoint with oil in some way that no one else has ever done it. We might lay hands on each other just by holding hands or patting on the back. It might help you just to talk about what you're going through pain-wise, emotional pain, physical pain, that kind of thing. But every time I've ever done this, it brought me closer to the ones in the circle, and the ones in the circle are the answer. The answer's not off in the sky somewhere, but the miracle's in you, and that miracle can come forth with a little prodding and digging sometimes. So at 1 o'clock, we'll have a little circle of healing, and if nothing else, we'll eat some cake and call it a circle of cake eating. So that'd be just as good, won't it?